Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Poore taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking about the Preds. They've got a huge week coming up. A couple to begin the week against the Carolina Hurricanes. And to help us talk more about that, we bring in our good friend Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Darren, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Good morning, Robbie and Joe. How you guys doing?
We are doing wonderful. Had some nice football action over the weekend and some Nashville Predators hockey as well. Two wins to kick off the season for the Preds. Darren, what has stood out to you in the first couple of games that's allowed the Predators to be successful right off the bat?
When's the torts explosion coming, right?
We can't be far away.
How many more losses before there's going to be an explosion in Columbus? It's just a matter of time.
And he was, like, positive after game two. He was all like, I really like what I'm seeing. I'm like, who is this guy?
That's when you know you're treading into dangerous territory with him.
Hey, by the way, that's the same. That's equivalent, Joe, to the general manager saying, no, we're not going to trade him. Trading him tomorrow. We have a trade to announce. I mean, it's a matter of time. If they don't get going, he is going to blow up. And he's got this whole Pierre-Luc Dubois situation that who knows how that's going to play out. I watched him. I don't know if you guys spend any time like just focusing in on him just to see if there was like body language you could read into, you know, like where is this going. I experimented with that. I didn't come up with anything. I have nothing to report, but I did watch him for a while just to see if he was like slumping, if he didn't care, you know, if his body language said get me out of here. Right. I didn't see that, but I was looking. What stood out is, hey, we didn't talk about bad patches. You know, that's been nice. For two games, we haven't talked about bad patches with this Nashville Predators roster, and that's refreshing. You know, things don't always go your way in the course of 60 minutes at this level. There are always more times than not, there's always going to be bad patches, right? And you're going to have to deal with them because, like I said, you don't dominate for 60 minutes. That's not how it works in the National Hockey League, and this team right now has gotten down both games. And they have fought their way out of that. I mean, who couldn't see Saturday night being 5-2, right? I mean, after the second period, everybody knew a third period explosion was coming. Oh, wait a minute. No, that was the most forgettable period ever. And I was like, what is going on with this game? What's happening? And then, you know, Philip Forsberg got things going, and away they went. I also like the balanced attack. I mean, this team up and down the roster, if you look at the time spent on ice, yeah, Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis are going to lead the way. Duh. Matias Ekholm will be third. But after that, it's a pretty balanced attack. I really like so far in two victories, you know. And it wasn't a blowout until the end, right? So it's not like the Predators jumped out with five goals in the first period and it was 5-0. And then you can use, you know, you can balance the lines out and, you know, everybody can take the same amount of shifts. And so the time on ice shouldn't surprise you. But that wasn't the case. These were two games that went down and well into the third period. And yet you look up and down the score sheet and you see 14 minutes, 15 minutes, 16 minutes, 17 minutes, basically throughout the lineup with all the forwards. And even the third D pairing, right, with 12, 13 minutes. Cole Smith on Thursday night was just shy of 6 minutes. That's the only guy that stood out of, hey, everybody else was in that range. Cole Smith on Thursday night, 6 minutes. But Olivier plays Saturday night and doubled those minutes. So right now, you know, with a condensed season, a compact season, and games stacked upon each other, that's a good thing that, right, you know, you don't have guys playing 30 minutes a night. And, you know, by the end of the season, they're wore out. So far, I've really liked the balanced attack.
What do you think, Darren, of Duchesne's line so far? And I guess Granlund will be back pretty soon. Do you see that being Duchesne, Granlund, Cunning as the long-term situation?
By the way, I'm just going to say this, and it has no relevance whatsoever. There's really no point in it, but I'm just going to say it anyway. When you guys were making your pick to click, after Joe, you made your selection of Rocco, which was a good one. Robbie starts out, you know, kind of setting his pick up. And I said out loud, as my wife walked by me, I said, you watch, Robbie is going to take Matt Duchesne. I guarantee you.
You know
he's going to take
Matt.
And I was like, is that a good thing or is that a scary thing? Does that mean we've been around each other way too much during Predators games that I said, watch, Robbie's going to take Matt Duchene. It's you can write this down. And then Robbie goes, I'm taking Matt Duchene. And she looked at me like, what in the world? And I was like, I'm just telling you. I know how we think. So, like I said, there was no relevance whatsoever to that story, but I wanted to pass along. No, I think it'll change. I mean, obviously, Granlund apparently is back. Now he's quarantined. He finally got out of Finland, and he's back. And we'll see when he gets back in the lineup what that means. I liked it. I mean, by the way, after the first period, they already changed the second line around. Nick Cousins moved up to that second line. Eric Halla moved down to the third line, and quite honestly, so far, I've liked both combinations a lot. I liked when Halla was up there with Cunnan and Duchene, and I thought Cousins looked good with the two of them. And so what will they do when Granlund gets back in the lineup? I don't know. I'll be curious to see. The main thing for me is, Joe, they're getting production, and it's been a good, good while since we've talked about a visible, productive second line, and so far through two games, that's what they have.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, also handles the Preds pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network, on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Darren, I talked about this heading into the season, how I felt as good about this six defensively as I felt in a long time. And a lot of that had to do, obviously, with the third pair, with Borowiecki and Benning coming into the fold. And through two games, I got to tell you, I feel validated. They've been very, very good so far. What have been your impressions of that pair, and how much stronger do you think that third pair is right now with those two in the fold?
Me like a lot. That third D pairing. I'm a huge fan. What's not to like, right? Borowiecki, that's my type of player. I love that about him. I love the fact that this team is also not afraid to get in there. We've heard it, right? We've talked about it. How would this team respond to John Hines' message? I mean, he's been preaching it. Now you've got new bodies in there. You've got new fresh blood. Some other people have been shipped out, even though I'm not sure I'm convinced that he was even talking to the guys that were shipped out of here. But for whatever reason, this new blood, new attitude, this new approach is working, because they seem to be doing exactly what John Hines has been preaching. This team gets after it. They're a scrappy team. I love, by the way, how many times – we've already seen in two games breakdowns, right? Whether it was UC out of net, an accidental collision around the net, and the defense collapses and saves a goal, right? We've already seen it. I mean, that could have been critical Thursday night.
Yeah.
UC's completely out of the net, out of position. They're getting ready to attempt a wraparound to a wide-open net. Matthias Ekholm and others collapse, but it was Ekholm who comes across with his stick and saves a goal. I mean, this team is defensively responsible. They are understanding, you know, what it takes around the blue ice, what they have to do to help protect their goalie and protect their net, and they're doing that. I like that a lot. And I like that they're hanging around the net on the other end, too. So it seems like if the message is getting through that John Hines has been preaching, I like the mentality of this team. It's two games. We'll see. A really good Carolina team's coming to town starting tonight. We'll see how they handle probably a better team. It's still early on, but I feel pretty good in saying Carolina's probably going to finish higher than Columbus in the standings, and so we'll see how the Predators and this team looks the next two nights against what we all think is a very good Hurricanes team.
We've talked some, Darren, today about Saros and, you know, kind of the idea of what would he need to do this year, you know, to kind of establish himself. I mean, he still feels like, you know, potentially sort of a transitional goaltender when you look at some of the young guys in the organization. But what do you think about his play so far, and what do you think about that, you know, Saros as a long-term answer?
Well, I like it so far. I like the fact that he's given up the first goal in the first period, and they've fallen behind 1-0, and then he has settled in. It is interesting how UC Saros kind of has we've seen that, even from the very, very beginning, his first ever start against the big, bad Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, right out of the gates, he gives up a goal at Bridgestone Arena to the Penguins, and you're like, uh-oh, this could be a long, long night for this young man, right, who's just beginning his NHL career. And he settled in, didn't give up another thing. The Predators ran away with a nice victory over the Penguins. He's been known to do that. I love that mentality about him. He gives up a goal. He does it. Kind of goes back to what we were talking about. There's no, you know, bad patches where he just falls apart. He tends to get stronger. He settles in. Like I said, the team is more defensively responsible. That is only going to help goaltending play. They just have a different mindset, and I think he's going to be fine. We're going to see it. I mean, look, we're all witnessing this together. It was strange Thursday night, and if there would have been 17-159 like a normal night, it would have been a little bit awkward because we've been so accustomed to 35 always being in the net to start, right, as the starter for the Predators, and right now it is clearly UC Saros. Now, what I'm very curious to see is how does John Hines handle this schedule? This is the first of 10 back-to-backs on this schedule. So does Pekka go tonight? Does he ride the hot hand and say, hey, UC's young, he's the hot hand, I'm just riding the hot hand, and UC plays both games? I don't know how this is going to play out, but I am curious to see how John Hines handles his first set of back-to-backs.
Darren, last thing for you here. Obviously, a guy we're going to pay attention to very closely all season long is Ryan Johansson, and not on the score sheet yet so far, but I do think has had moments where he's impacted the game very positively. What have you thought of Ryan Johansson through the first two games?
Just my thoughts, Robbie, and watching him, and that's another guy that I've tried to pick certain guys out and just sit there and watch their play and see what they look like. I don't know about you, but just me, I know his voice reflects what I'm about to say because we've heard it in his words, but sometimes they're just words. You need to see the actions. I just think his body language is different. I think his mentality is different. I think the words that he has been putting out there, the awareness that he knows he has to be better, he means it. And his play looks different. There were times in the last couple of years, you know this, me and you've talked about it. I don't like the body language of Ryan Johansson out there. It doesn't look good. It does, whether it's what I think it is or not, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look like he is giving everything he's got. I haven't seen that in the first two games. That first line, as we know, has been buzzing around, including 92. I just see a different mindset. It almost feels like he's treating this like the playoffs, this regular season. And so, to me, early sample, small sample, looks really good. I like what I see out of Ryan Johansson. And let's be honest, we keep acting like he's this big goal scorer. He's more about assists, and he does other things, the face-offs, and he is going to set up his line mates. But what we've seen in his body of work here is he's about a 15-goal-a-year season, and that's what he puts in year in and year out, about 15 goals. So we shouldn't expect too much in that department, but I wasn't looking for that. I wasn't going to judge him on by the whether he had goals or not. I was going to judge him by what did I see him out on the ice, and I saw a guy that was getting after it like Forsberg and Arvidsson when that line was out there.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also handles the Preds pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren, great stuff, my man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. We'll be listening at 10 o'clock with Darren when Darren, Donick, and Chase gets underway. And when we come back, we'll get into the UC Saros conversation a little bit more. What does he have to do to prove that he could be the long-term answer for the Predators at goalie? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Dubois pass across and a big stop, one made and then a second one made by UC Saros. Ekholm will skate down the remaining time. Predators with a third period explosion win this game by a 5-2 count.
I thought Juice was, you know, even that first power play they had, I mean, they seemed us. And, you know, the puck's going in the net if you're not getting that type of goaltending tonight on that first power play for them. So he made saves when we had breakdowns. He made multiple saves. I think he's really tracking the puck. I think he reads the play well. So, you know, I think that's good to see. And when Juice is playing his best, those are the components of his game that are really strong.
That was Predators head coach John Hines after the game on Saturday. Another win for the Predators, 5-2 to begin the season, 2-0. Both wins coming against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And UC Saros in goal for both of these games against the Nashville Predators to begin the season. He stopped 71 of 74 shots in the first two games. some of which have been a pretty high quality in front of the net. And I think he's done an outstanding job positionally through the first two games. And that got us asking the question, obviously, Joe, this is a massive year for UC Soros. You look at what's behind him in the organization right now. Connor Ingram has played extremely well at the American Hockey League level. You just drafted Yaroslav Askarov in the draft in the first round. He projects to be an outstanding quality NHL goaltender a couple years down the line. We'll see when exactly he's brought into the fold here in Nashville. But the point is, there are a lot of good prospects and a lot of good and intriguing options that the Predators have at the goaltending position as they move forward here. So it's up to UC Soros to prove that he should be the long-term answer in goal. As you evaluate what you've seen so far and what you think it's going to take from him this year to get to that point, what do you think is important for UC Soros to establish this year in terms of proving to Predators management and to this coaching staff that he can be trusted to be the guy moving forward long-term?
Well, I think they feel comfortable with him now. He's a good goaltender, but like you said, if you want to talk about what you need to demonstrate for something like that, I think you got to be really, really good because you don't make that draft choice if you feel like, yeah, we're all set. This is all. I mean, look, you could have extended him by now, right? He's going to be a restricted free agent at the end of this year, but clearly it's a wait and see situation with UC Soros. It's a great situation to have him and to have him and Pecorine right now. I think especially this season, that's going to come in handy, you know, to have two guys that you can trust. But obviously everyone is trying to figure out how good can this guy be? You know, everybody knows he's good. There's no question he's a good goaltender. He has grown into this role. He's overall been impressive, but is he someone who can be great in this league? I mean, can he sustain it over a period of time and have the kind of seasons that Pecorine has had for this franchise? I think there's a lot of doubt about that, and I think that's fair. You know, I don't know that he has that kind of a ceiling, but so far, very good start to this year to kind of show that he's up to this challenge and wants to make these decisions difficult in the future for this organization.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, for me, Soros just needs to show consistently good play. So far, he's done that, but it's only been two games. Let's see what he does during the Kane series, either today or tomorrow with him getting in there. And that's it. I mean, you need to have consistent play. And you know, traditionally, Soros has struggled to begin the season. And it's been obviously in a different role. He was the backup when those struggles were taking place, and now he's the starting goaltender. So much easier, I think, to get into a rhythm from that standpoint, but you've got the grind tossed into it as well, dealing with games, especially this year in a condensed schedule, that are coming at you seemingly on an every other night basis. So it'll be fascinating to see how Soros handles that. Ben on Twitter says, in all reality, the defense has looked a lot better so far this year, which is absolutely helping him out. And I agree with that to a point. Yep. I mean, we're talking about a two-game sample size, but I do think the defense, there has been a commitment level there. There has been an ability to defend the house pretty well for the most part in front of the net. They had a couple of breakdowns, I think more so in this last game on Saturday than they did in the first game on Thursday night, and Soros bailed them out time and time again then. But I do think defensively, for the most part, they've been pretty solid up until this point.
So let's take this, you know, let's take that. I think that's a great point. You know, and we've been talking some on this show about Tom Brady. You know, let's take Tom Brady last year, Tom Brady this year, you know, and the people he was throwing to last year, the offense he was in last year. Last year he didn't look like the GOAT to me. He looked like a disease GOAT at times, okay?
Okay.
And it looked like the Titans ended his career. Now you put him in this much better situation because goaltender and quarterback, you know, there's parallels. I mean, that's what everybody talks about, those two positions in an NFL/NHL town. And look how much better Tom Brady looks because of that. And I think the same is true so far. Two games, small sample size. But I agree. I think that defense makes a big difference. And, I mean, not just being more sound and responsible. I mean, they've directly saved his butt a couple times here, too. You know, like, you know, getting up, crowding the net, and getting that puck out of there. But that's also where it's hard when you go back to last year. And I think maybe even more so with Pecorine. man, there were some nights where it's like, okay, a couple soft goals, you can't let those in. But also some nights where it's like, my gosh, is that guy under siege? Like, how are we blaming him for this? It's just they're making all these mistakes, turnovers in the neutral zone, you know, out of position. And how are you going to have good goaltending in that kind of situation? So it's just an interesting – I thought of those two things together because supporting cast means so much.
And then going to be a pretty good litmus test, I think, tonight and tomorrow for the Predators against Carolina, because as Darren was talking about in the last segment, I do think Carolina at the end of the day will end up being a better team in the standings than Columbus. And you talk about a team, I mean, with just a ton of young talent. You've got Andrei Svechnikov, Nino Niederreiter there now. You've got Sebastian Aho on the back end, guys like Dougie Hamilton. You know, Ryan Dezingle coming in there at the forward group as well. Vinny Trocheck. I mean, they've got a lot of intriguing players in Carolina. I think they're going to be a very, very good team. As a matter of fact, in my preseason predictions, I had them making the semifinals in the playoffs. So I think a really good litmus test coming up for the Predators in the next couple of days. So you're talking about a team in Carolina that traditionally controls a lot of the action. They possess the puck very well. Their offensive shot total numbers, they usually outshoot teams on most nights. So I think a step up in competition in terms of the test Saros and this defense will have tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes, who probably going to come into this game a little frustrated. They lost the other night to the Red Wings 4-2, and we know it's going to be a tough season in Detroit. So anytime you lose to the Red Wings, probably not very happy with your game and your performance. So I would expect Carolina to be ready to go out of the gate tonight.
Yeah, that's inexcusable, losing to the Red Wings. So they'll be upset. Svechnikov already has a couple goals and an assist. Aho hasn't really gotten going yet. Still looking for his first goal. Very good team, you know, and it's a nice kind of works out. The Preds start out with a team that I think is, you know, a similar team. You know, I think that their profiles are similar. And now here's a team that most people would pick to finish ahead of the Predators. And like you said, very young, talented team. So now can you step your game up to that and keep playing this kind of consistent, kind of gritty hockey that we've seen in two games?
And I think it's going to be important during the next couple of days here against Carolina. I do think there's another level for that Johansson line to reach. I mean, that's going to be a consistent theme all season long with this group. And Forsberg's been great so far. A couple of goals in two games and just great individual efforts on those plays to let it happen. I mean, both of them. Basically coast-to-coast by Philip Forsberg with a play starting in the defensive zone and him working his way into an odd man rush in the offensive zone. So really good job by him so far. I don't think that the line as a whole with Johansson and Arvidsson as Forsberg have been as consistently dangerous as you would like them to be. So I like the effort. I like a lot of what I've seen, especially in the D zone from that line. To me, you got to start taking another step forward offensively beginning tonight against Carolina.
Yeah, you want to see the production certainly, but I think that, you know, to the discussion you and Darren were having just on Johansson so far, I like what I'm seeing. I mean, I think this is, you know, the overall play of Johansson so far has been good. You know, you got to have production. You want that line to be more dangerous and create more chances, but he's been. Because obviously you need him to do so many different things. I think he looks like a guy who's locked in so far.
So it became over the weekend official between Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons. He will be the new head coach of the Falcons. What do we make of that fit, and where do the Titans go from here in terms of the offensive coordinator position? We'll discuss that when we come back. But first, I have got a word from FanDuel. And basketball, the NBA is back, and you know what that means. It's time for me to fire up the FanDuel Sportsbook app. From the opening tip to the final buzzer, there are so many ways to win and to bet on FanDuel. They've got fast withdrawals. They've got a range of betting options, the money lines, the spreads, the over-unders, player props, you name it, FanDuel Sportsbook has it. And if you sign up today, FanDuel will let you place your first bet risk-free. They'll give you up to $1,000 back if you don't win. And when you do win, FanDuel pays you your winnings in as little as 24 hours, and you don't have to track down some shady bookie for your money. So just do me a favor. When you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up with promo code ROB. That's R-O-B, so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 14 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Preds fans, Smashville Live returns this Wednesday on 102.5 The Game, and the show will air every Wednesday during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And something new this year, we're going virtual, so that means you can watch the show from the comforts of your own home via the 102.5 The Game Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. So make sure you're joining us every Wednesday from 6 to 7 this season for hockey season. For Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, we talked about it on Friday, and it became official over the weekend. Arthur Smith, now the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. So there is an opening for the Titans and their offensive coordinator position, which we'll get to here in just a second. But what do you think of the fit for Arthur Smith in Atlanta? Why do you think that was the choice for him? And do you think Arthur Smith is in a position to succeed given the state of that roster and the state of the salary cap at the moment with the Falcons?
Yeah, well, look, he would have picked the Jets. It looked like the Jets, you know, didn't offer him, you know, and that was one team that he had multiple interviews with. So, and you know, the Chargers kind of did their little surprise hire. It's another one of those, I, you know, have carried Sean McVay's laundry four times, so I get a head coaching job hires out in L.A. But I think this is a good fit. Look, nothing's going to be perfect. I mean, if you're coming in as a new head coach in the NFL, very rarely are you going to inherit a Ferrari and just, you know, here's the keys and go. But you got some good things there. I think the ownership is a big part of it. Arthur Blank has had consistently high marks, and this is a league with some owners who get consistently bad marks. So, you know, Arthur Blank and what he's done and what people who work for him say stands out in this league. And so that's a big part of it. And you've got a pretty good situation no matter how you go. I've heard some thoughts about Julio Jones maybe being on the block, you know, to help. I mean, the Falcons are in cap trouble. Yeah. You know, they're not as bad as the Eagles. They're not as bad as the Saints are about to be, but they're in a bad spot. But you know, you have assets and you could keep Matt Ryan and still draft a QB. You could try to deal Matt Ryan, but you have the number four pick. So to me, I would think some of this appeal of this job would also be that you might be getting a special young talent that you can try to develop. And if Arthur Smith gets Justin Fields at number four, that could be one heck of a combination for the next several years.
It could be, and maybe a guy joining Arthur Smith on his staff in Atlanta could be Dean Pease. This coming from Jason Lockenfora over the weekend, saying that he's expecting Dean Pease could be a part of that staff for Arthur Smith in some capacity. So didn't come out and say that he was going to be the defensive coordinator, but maybe Dean Pease coming on fold with Arthur Smith in Atlanta. And as you would imagine, Joe, Titans fans read that and just lost their minds over the weekend about what that means for the Titans. Why can't Dean Pease come back and be the DC here in Nashville with Tennessee? Is Vrabel even trying to go get Dean Pease? So what do you think of all this? Do you think Dean Pease actually ends up in Atlanta with Arthur Smith? And if he does, what, if anything, does that tell you about the Titans and Mike Vrabel and maybe their approach to defensive coordinator?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm taking that with a grain of salt. And if Mr. you know, slippery when wet Lockenfora ends up right, then you know, then you go to the next step. Okay, so how did this happen? Look, I mean, I think as Corey Curtis said earlier, you have to raise your eyebrow and be like, man, so why did he retire and why is he coming back, but not with Vrabel, but with, you know, a guy who he worked under, you know, Vrabel with in Tennessee? Does that mean that he just decided, crap, retirement, it just isn't for me? Or did he just want to leave here? I mean, I don't know. I just think that it's not worth spending too much time on it. If you're a Titans fan, you want Vrabel to go get a defensive coordinator. And Dean Pease, he can't be long for this league, right? I mean, I mean, maybe he will. Maybe he'll end up going like Dick LeBeau until he's really, really old. But it can't be a long-term thing. I mean, if you're the Titans, you have to just kind of move on from that and go try to find a good coordinator. Even if that coordinator isn't in your family of coaches, maybe someone with some different ideas. I don't think some new ideas would be all that bad for this defense. The first thing they need is some better players in some different spots, but they need a coordinator to come in and get some of their good players back to playing well, which some of them did not do nearly enough in 2020.
And speaking of new ideas, obviously there's now a job opening for the Titans at the offensive coordinator spot. And it's interesting to think about how they could go about handling this. I mean, you've got some candidates in-house that maybe you want to entertain. Keith Carter, the offensive line coach right now. Pat O'Hara at quarterbacks coach. Todd Downing, a guy getting a lot of noise as well at tight ends coach. So there are some options there offensively that are already on staff that Vrabel could go. Maybe you look outside of the organization. Anthony Lynn just fired from the Chargers. He's been an offensive coordinator. Maybe he's a fit. Doug Peterson just fired from the Eagles. Maybe he's a fit at offensive coordinator. It's going to be really fascinating to me to see how Vrabel handles this and which direction he wants to go, because we all know it. I mean, the offense has been the identity of this team for the past couple of seasons since Tannehill has taken over at quarterback. They've been elite in that category through the passing game, the running game, whatever stats you want to throw out there. The Titans measure up pretty well offensively. So it's going to be fascinating to see how Vrabel handles this and whether or not he is comfortable going outside of the organization with his next hire.
Yeah, and a Vrabel-ish hire would be Tim Kelly. You know, Houston sucked this year, but not on offense. Deshaun Watson threw for 4,800, even though Bill O'Brien sent DeAndre Hopkins away, and that was a pretty good offense. It's been a pretty good offense. Tim Kelly's a guy who worked with Vrabel in Houston. Is this someone, if he had a good relationship with him, is that a possible option? I think definitely that's a name that should be at least circulated on the speculation wire here because of the past history. And we know that Vrabel values past history.
He does. And an interesting name brought up by Adam Sparks over the weekend from the Tennessean was Tom Herman, who was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State while Vrabel was on staff. And obviously there's some familiarity there. Vrabel apparently spoke at his coach's clinic over the past offseason. So a good relationship between Mike Vrabel and Tom Herman. And it didn't work out for Herman at Texas the way that Texas thought it would. And now he's on the open market. So what do you think about a guy like that who doesn't have play calling experience at the NFL level, has done very well in different stops at the college level, maybe coming into the fold and joining the Titans staff here as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, it's worth a thought. You know, it's definitely worth a thought. That, again, like you said, they have the Ohio State history. With a lot of these things, you know, it's you wonder, you know, not everybody gets along great on a staff. You know, it doesn't guarantee because someone worked with someone that they would want to work with them again. But like you said, the fact that he did the clinic with them, probably a good sign in terms of that. With Tom Herman, some of the same questions that you would have with Urban Meyer going to Jacksonville will be there. He's very much that offense, that quarterback run heavy spread offense. But, you know, at the same time, it's not like these guys don't understand what league they're in here, you know, and it's not like they didn't do a lot of different things. Tom Herman was a very successful OC with the Buckeyes. Great, you know, short tenure at Houston, and was the hottest thing on the coaching market. What was it, 2 years ago? No, 3 years ago, right? I mean, 3 years ago, he was the hottest coach, basically, that any college program could hire. And LSU tried to hire him and all this stuff, and now he's a retread. Well, that's how quickly it happens in the coaching world.
Joe, Doug Peterson to me is such an interesting name, because we've talked about it here before on the show. You win the Super Bowl as a head coach in Philadelphia, and that game specifically between the Eagles and the Patriots, I think we would all agree, one of the best coach games that we have ever seen. I mean, just think about what we've seen from, you know, that offense since then, and from Nick Foles specifically since then, and to get him to play at the level he was playing at during those playoffs, I mean, that's almost worth, you know, a 5-year contract extension by itself for Doug Peterson during that run. But as you said, I mean, that shows how quickly this league moves on and you adapt and maybe things get away from you. He's out in Philadelphia. Number one, I'm interested to see how much interest he's going to continue to garner on the head coaching front of things as they go forward here. Maybe he waits for a job like that. But if not, if he does go back to the OC route, that's an interesting name to me because I think he's a really good coach. I think he's a really good offensive mind. I realize Frank Reich had a lot to do with that in Philadelphia as well, and now he's doing some similar things at Indianapolis with how well they've played. But Doug Peterson's just a really interesting name to me because I think he's a very good coach.
I agree. I mean, how could you – I mean, just watch that game again. I think that was one of the best – like you said, best coach, most aggressively coached games I've ever seen. He's done very good things. I think a lot of the Eagles' issues are GM/cap-related, paying way too many guys to try to keep things together, and then all of a sudden you end up in cap hell. So, I mean, I think a lot of that is – and it's just Carson Wentz and the mystery of what's happened to him. Is that because Doug Peterson lost his touch or has Carson Wentz basically lost his fastball? I think it's more the latter. So, I think he could be a really intriguing choice. You're talking about going a different direction, and you never know. I think if the Titans hire internally here, if Vrabel goes internal, the reaction now versus two years ago from fans would be totally different. Yeah. You're like, that totally makes sense. Do it, But I still think there's value – in talking to people, getting a sense for them and having an open mind on the idea of someone who has that much experience and achievement in this league coming in and maybe even being able to build on some of the things that you've done so successfully the last couple of years.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kevin from Clarksville texts in and says, dare I say it, as an offensive coordinator, Adam Gase. And Joe, you brought that up a little bit earlier in the show. That obviously would not be popular with Titans fans because I think fans sometimes have difficulty separating what a head coach is and what an OC is. And we had, similar conversations about Bill O'Brien. I wouldn't go that route. I know a lot of Titans fans wouldn't go that route, but it is interesting to see what Adam Gase could look like as the OC. You're not asking him to come in here and be a head coach, which he clearly at this point cannot do.
Look, I have built-in respect for any fellow alums of the Marshall, Michigan Youth Football
League. I'm sure you do.
As Adam Gase, I don't know if he was as good as me in that league. I'm not sure. I'll have to go check the records. But tell you what, here's the thing with Adam Gase. Obviously, just a disaster as a head coach, okay? And you can look at his entire career now and say, he lucked out here and there and Peyton Manning, all that stuff, right? But I will say that Tannehill's best season before he came here. And this was the 2016 season. And Gase, I did a big story on this for The Athletic last year about that whole time in Miami, including Gase just coming in and be like, why is everyone not in love with Tannehill? This dude's awesome. And Tannehill was having a monster year, 2016. He hurt his knee. He was out. They made the playoffs still without him. And, Matt Moore is in Pittsburgh and they had no chance. Then you go from there and it's injuries and he never really got going again. And then, Flores comes in and they're moving on. And we never really got to see it again, but it was actually quite good in that year before he got hurt. I'm just saying, I know that if they were to hire Adam Gase, it would be just howls of just fury from the fan base. And Gase's reputation may be to the extent that he has to go be a quality control coach somewhere next year. I don't know. But it's actually not as crazy as you might think.
It's not. And as we've figured out through this segment here, there's going to be a lot of options for the Titans out there at offensive coordinator. So we'll see what decision the Titans decide to make on that front. Maybe as soon as this week. Who knows? Maybe we've got an answer very, very shortly. So we'll continue to keep you updated on that front. When we come back, Tennessee was back on the basketball court this weekend against Vanderbilt. How did they look? Where did they go from here? We'll discuss that when we come back. Also, get the latest on Jeremy Pruitt and his status at Tennessee as well. That's all coming up. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And while we had some NFL divisional playoffs going on over the weekend, Tennessee's men's basketball team also back in action. They took on Vanderbilt on Saturday. An 81-61 win for the Tennessee Volunteers. Keon Johnson finishes the game with 16 points. John Fulkerson with 15 points in that game. Also had 8 rebounds as well. So, Joe, what did you think of Tennessee's performance in that game against Vanderbilt? It had been a while since they had been on the court.
Yeah, it was impressive what they did defensively against Scottie Pippen Jr. He ended up getting decent numbers, but he really struggled for a lot of that game. Santiago Vescovi was a very effective pest in that way, picking up some fouls on him and things like that. I thought it was overall pretty impressive. You know, they had some stretches of being stagnant on offense, and this is still something they struggle with, but they're back to playing their defense. I think we're seeing as the season goes on, you know, what Alabama did to them is in part because Alabama is a dangerous,
yes, they are,
very good basketball team. They should be well into the rankings today after, you know, they destroy Kentucky on the road. I know Kentucky's not good this year, but still destroy them on the road, then just absolutely obliterate a pretty decent Arkansas team. So that was a good humbling from Tennessee, but it was also, I think, a little bit more about Alabama than it was about them, and they've got it figured out. Jerry Stackhouse's team, you know, it's now they lose. Tyron Lawrence is out with an ACL. You know, they're not getting what from DJ Harvey, what I think they thought they were going to get. And there's just so much on Pippen. I still think that team is going to win some games this year in the SEC. They run good stuff, and I love Dylan Dessou also, along with Pippen as a sophomore with, yeah, a lot of upside. But, man, they've got to get something, anything from the interior. Right now they're getting very little.
Yeah, Dylan Dessou with a big game on Saturday, 19 points. Scottie Pippen Jr., as you mentioned, 18 points. But you got to start to find some offense outside of those two guys. And I think – what was your called shot for Vanderbilt before the season began, that they would have a winning record when the season was over? Is that right, or am I making that up?
I believe, yes. So I didn't call them to get in the NCAA tournament. I called the Vanderbilt women in the NCAA tournament, right, which is not going to turn out well. And I also didn't know that two of their top three players would be opting out of the season. But,
sure,
regardless, that's not going to happen. But, yeah, I think so. I'll go back and find it. I think winning record overall, and that's a stretch. You know, they're going to have to turn it on here. They've had some chances. They had a chance against Mississippi State, and they let it go, and they gotta play better down the stretch of these close games. They absolutely could have won in Lexington too.
And Joe, it's been interesting over the weekend. I was starting to pay attention to some stuff coming out of the Volunteer football program, and we talked about on Friday the news coming out from VolQuest that Jeremy Pruitt was getting on a flight to California and going to meet with Henry To'oto'o. Kevin Steele was joining him on that flight, and it read like, all right, if that's the case, Jeremy Pruitt, he's going to be back next year, and he's going to be the head coach. And, you know, the Volunteer football Instagram account put out some, you know, like hype videos over the weekend and just some programs that they're running. Pruitt's in the video, and I'm like, all right, well, he's definitely back next year. And it just continues to unfold day after day where you just don't know what's going to happen. So, Joe, based on what you've seen come out of the program, based on the moves that we've talked about over the course of the past 3 or 4 days in Knoxville with the football program, where do things sit right now? What does the future look like for Jeremy Pruitt at this point?
I'm sticking with my prediction, and that is that he is not the coach next year.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% on that, but I'm more than 80% on that.
Wow.
But it's very weird. You're right. Now, here another thing that's weird. So Austin Pope basically opts back in,
yeah,
right? But so, like, some have looked at that like, oh, there's a sign that Pruitt won't be back because there was no way he was coming back to play for him.
Right.
So it's just – look, right now he has got the job, and he's going to do everything he can to try to keep the job, try to make the job better, and why wouldn't he? I mean, and that's what I think people – and, look, I had the same reaction to it first. I'm like, man, if he's going out there, what does that mean? But I just think it means that he's doing everything he can to strengthen his position. You get Henry To'oto'o back for sure. Okay, look, I'm in better position to keep my job. But it doesn't mean he will. This investigation, there's stuff that's going to come out in this investigation that's going to make everyone look bad. And, I mean, look, it's one of those things like if you want to clutch your pearls and think this doesn't go on all over the place, well, okay, well, you're being naive. But regardless, these investigations and details coming out don't go on every place. And when this happens, there's going to be some details that look bad. And I don't know if that's enough to fire him, but I don't think he's going to be back.
It was just interesting, especially when that report from VolQuest comes out, because the reaction from Tennessee fans was, all right, if you're thinking about firing him, why would you let him fly out and talk to Henry Tolotoa if he's not going to be a part of things moving forward? It's a good question. I mean, if you're Tennessee, like, why are you letting him do it? Now, the easy answer to that could be, yeah, you'd like to keep Henry Tolotoa into the fold regardless of who the football coach is next year with that program. But it just the tea leaves here have been so difficult to try to read, and the fact that we still just have radio silence from this athletic department and this program just makes it even more difficult to try to figure out, and quite frankly, even more maddening as a Tennessee fan.
It's ridiculous that we've gotten to here. It's ridiculous. But as far as the tea leaves, I mean, this is how I'm looking at it. Until it's not his job, he better be doing his job.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so, I mean, yeah, as far as, I mean, look, like until they fire him, then he's still got the job. So it's not like he's not going to be allowed to take a flight somewhere to talk to a player. Like you said, if you're in charge at Tennessee, you want as many good players on next year's football team as you can get, regardless of who the coach is. So I think it was an overreaction to that, and I could be wrong, and he may end up being back. And there are definitely conflicting signs out there, but the overall sign is still bad for him because of this investigation. And man, I tell you what, if we get to the end of this week and there's nothing from the leaders at Tennessee, tone deaf is not the right word. We need something stronger than tone deaf.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. Kevin on Twitter tweets in and says, you have competing factions with different agendas at UT, so that's why the signals are so confusing. And look, I think there's something to that. I think it's a disaster up there in terms of the way that place has been run for the last decade plus, and this certainly not making things any better. So hopefully we'll have some sort of news one way or the other at some point this week regarding Jeremy Pruitt and his future at Tennessee. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. A lot on today's show. If you missed it, you can check it out on Apple and Spotify and talk about everything you missed. Arthur Smith, the Preds, NFL playoffs, all of it on the table. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.